gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Okay. Anything happened while we were on vacation? Once again? Hello. We're back. Sort of. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Wow, wow, wow. Dogs and cats living together on the verge of World War III. Jim is Jim overslept, but is healthy.
He overslept.
God. Thank God. Jim will be here momentarily.
We hope.
Yes. Roland Scahill, a sexy liberal tour director, was supposed to join Melissa Fitzgerald, Hot Bree, and I at Canyon Ranch in Miami.
In Miami?
Right.
They have canyons there?
Right. No, there is no canyon. There's only beach.
Oh, I see.
There's some hilarious pictures of me trying to climb a rock wall. We'll get to all that.
Shouldn't they call it Beach Ranch then?
No.
Oh.
Shush.
Okay.
So Roland was supposed to join us, and he was instead decided to go into the hospital for an endoscopy because he has a bleeding ulcer.
Because he's high-strung.
Yes, and he did not make it. And then in the meantime, we found out Rocky Mountain Mike, our beloved Rocky Mountain Mike, had a mild heart attack over vacation, is in the hospital now.
Yes.
We'd like to send out some thoughts and prayers to all of our friends.
I was emailing with Rocky Mountain Mike earlier this morning, though, and he's in good spirits. He's fine, but he's still in the hospital, so.
Well, and he's screwed because it's before October 1st and Obamacare kicks in, so he says he is at Boucher Hospital.
Yeah.
Where good doctors have bold ideas. Voucher Hospital.
Voucher Hospital. Brought to you by Ace Hardware Stuff.
Nurses to the nurses station.
Dr. Ryan.
Hello, Mary. Well, I've got good news and bad news.
Yes?
First, the bad news. You need a bypass operation, and it costs $167,000.
And the good news?
The good news?
Yes.
I have a voucher here.
This is for $2 off an extra value meal at Wendy's.
Oh, wrong voucher. Here you go.
Okay, this is for $2 off a $167,000 bypass operation.
You're welcome.
Will Mary get her bypass operation? Will Dr. Ryan be able to use a voucher for 18 holes at Pebble Beach? Tune in tomorrow to Voucher Hospital.
Yay! All right, get well soon, Rocky Mountain Mike.
Yep.
Oh, my God. What the... is happening.
I have no idea.
Oh, look at all the soundbites. Syria, did something happen?
Just a little bit. We're going to have even more soundbites tomorrow because the president speaks on 6 networks today, and then he speaks before the nation tomorrow
night. Yeah, and I am very, let me just say I'm open to what the president's going to say tomorrow night, because I got to say, we have Rude Pundit and Reverend Jim Wallace on today, who, like 80% of the American people, are against doing anything in Syria. I cannot say I'm for it, but I got to be honest this morning, this is a tough, and I think even for a liberal, it's a tough one. You know, I think Chris Hayes over the break, and he said he's against it, but he respects his father, who I think is a minister, who's for it on humanitarian grounds. And what do you do when you got people you respect, like, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Barbara Boxer, who are for it? And I got to say, I posted a piece while I was gone on from Nicholas Kristof, and there's another great one in the New York Times yesterday. Just the one I posted was the right questions on Syria, and this is really a tough.
Yeah.
And I literally, maybe it's because I'm a Libra and I can't make a decision. But do you know what I'm saying? I love Alan Grayson, and when he says things, I agree with some things he says, and then I listen to John Kerry and I agree with some things he says, and Pelosi. And by the way, does it make a difference when it's Dick Cheney saying it or Barbara Boxer to me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes a lot. And I was thinking how ironic it is, Chris, that first of all, right now, at the moment, France. Mm-hmm. One of the only countries with this is almost like a upside down parallel universe from Iraq.
It is.
I mean, I blame George Bush, I gotta say,
absolutely,
for a lot of this because
for the war
now,
fatigue.
Someone actually does have weapons of mass destruction, which could be a threat to American security, as John Kerry said yesterday. And of course we don't want to do anything about it because we have such war fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you know what? The Senate Intelligence Committee.
And France is the only one. Remember the Freedom Fries and all that crap?
Yeah. The Senate Intelligence Committee posted, you know, the full length videos of all of those victims of the gas attacks.
I
and
know.
You're like, we got to do something, but we don't know for sure who gassed those people.
It was Assad, but okay. I mean, yes, we could wait for the UN report, but
we don't have definitive proof of it.
Oh, I think we do. I think we do. Well, but I mean, it's just that I don't even think
some people say we don't.
Question: People don't. People.
Some people I respect say we don't have all of the answers.
Right, but Chris, this poll says people believe that he did it. They just don't think we should do anything about it. You know, and I get it. Like the people, you know, recede into their own. Like, oh, you know, we talked about this before the break. Like, what about ism? Like, what about this mm-hmm. happening here and there? Let me just tell you one thing, too. Oh, what about kids here? Or what about kids dying of gun violence? Let me tell you one thing. Republicans aren't going to do anything about that, no matter what we do in Syria anyway. That's part of the problem. It's not like, oh, they're going to give money for education and infrastructure and, you know what I mean? If we don't go into Syria, Republicans don't want to. They're going to vote against anything, and a lot of this is just reflexively against because the president's for it.
Yes, the Republicans aren't thinking with their heads on this thing.
Right.
So I have absolutely no respect for what the Republicans say.
Oh, the good news is Steph is back in town, so it all should be fine now.
Have you heard the news?
Thank you, Audra.
Stephanie's back in town. Can I get a
They were off for a week. I took some Xanax and I'm okay. I'd lose my cool, but I held it together. And I hope you enjoyed getting away from L.A. And your visit with your mama was okay. And I hope the Mooks had a good time on vacay. Now, Steffi, turn up the volume. Go crazy!
Yeah. Back in town, mama's back in town. The Mooks are back in town.
It was a pretty light news week.
Back in town.
Not a whole lot going on in the world. You didn't miss much.
Thank you, Audra, in Minneapolis. The important thing is Ben Affleck is going to be Batman. What do we think about that? Is that what the Syrian thing is about? Maybe. Maybe there's dissension about that.
And Miley Cyrus twerked.
Right. Right. Okay. Anyway, so I got to say, obviously, Reverend Jim Wallace, who we love, the official preacher mm-hmm. of the Stephanie Miller Show, makes some great points, and we're going to talk to him in a little bit. Rude Pundit makes some great points about this, about the whole Syrian situation. But, I remember, Chris, right after 9/11, I lived in New York, and I was hosting a show on Oxygen, one of my recently canceled television.
Sure.
Right. But I remember. Oh, hi, Jim. Good. Jim's fine. But anyway, I remember Eve Ensler, who I love, you mm-hmm. know, Vagina Monologues.
Yeah.
We were having like a little town hall, and she's like, I think we should drop Doves over Afghanistan.
That won't do anything.
And I'm like, I there are good points on every side of this, and I'm just, you know.
That would mean lots of squab for Afghanis.
Right. Hi, Jim. Oh, Jim has a new haircut. Look how handsome.
What?
Oh, it's so cute. Hello, Jim. Anyway, Julie in Seattle writes, it's interesting, a lot of mail, obviously, over the break, and I think what everyone says is, I was seeing one cartoon with the president, like, in front of two doors, and it's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, she writes, Mama, let's say the president does what almost everyone wants him to do, give Assad a free pass. Says, yeah, they did it, they better not do it again, but Brits say no, and the U.S. polls say no, so it's really no one's business how many people Syria's government wants to kill, or what they use to kill them. Good luck to you people. A few weeks later, Assad's army gasses, say, five more Damascus suburbs, and the morning news greets us with shocking images of scores of babies and little kids frothing at the mouth. I can hear it now. Obama put political expediency ahead of saving the lives of innocent people. Obama gave Syrians the green light, and now Assad can kill as many people as he wants. Obama emboldened Assad by caving to political pressure. The blood of innocence is on his hands. And later, when some other a-hole regime sees unrest starting up and decides to gas a pack of its citizens to settle things down, they'll say Obama stood by while international law against using chemical weapons was flouted, and it's his fault they're being used now in fill-in unstable, despot-ruled country of your choice here. Obama emboldened fill-in evil despot here to use these weapons by letting Assad get away with it. And later still, when Iran announces it's now nuclear-armed and other Middle Eastern countries scramble to join them, and the next time there's a war, they can shoot it out and end civilization as we know it, they'll say Iran and those other countries knew no one would stop them from dabbling in nuclear war because Obama proved the U.S. is a paper tiger. He can't win politically either way. So I guess he's going to do what he thinks is the right thing to do based on what he knows and thinks will happen. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes. Time for me now to channel Stephanie Miller, the elder, your mom. He's doing the best he can. P.S. Listening to the far left unanimity about this, I'm wondering what happened to all those people who spent years agitating for Bush to do something to stop the slaughter in South Sudan and when the North was committing genocide on them. Apparently that was Obama's fault, too. I mean, that's the thing, Jim. I don't know where I understand, like most people, I'm sure you're against it. I just don't. I do think this is weakens America and it weakens the presidency. Forget Obama. I mean, and I do agree with him that it's not his red line. It's international law's red line.
But well, do you think it was smart of him to say, okay, we're going to be attacked? We're
going
to be attacking. And then he said, oh, wait a minute. Let's get Congress's approval first. Then he finds out that Congress probably won't approve it. Yeah. Now he's painted himself into a corner.
I was reading one thing that they were saying a lot of people privately on both sides of the aisle wish he'd just done it. Wish he'd gone ahead and done
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
But that's because they
that
don't.
Was a, that was a misstep.
Right, because they're politically gutless, I think. Because nobody, you know
but
what I mean?
They don't have to face the consequences of it. You know,
right.
If we kill lots of civilians
right.
in the process,
right.
then it's, you know, on a
it's politically chance. Expedient for Congress to turn down the request.
Right, right. Dennis yeah. Kucinich had a great article where he asked a lot of questions about what happened, and it's very interesting. It's really a lot more complicated than it seems on the
yeah.
surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
well,
there
yeah.
was shelling going on, and you can have gas planted on shells as well as
yeah.
rockets.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to say who did what to whom and when. And looking at pictures of Assad, he looks like a scared bunny rabbit. I think he's not... He probably didn't want this job at all to begin with, and especially not now.
Yeah.
So
not with the civil war going on.
And, you know, I mean, I just think that the problem is now is a time when the fact that we are so split in this country and there is such like Obama derangement syndrome is like now a time we're supposed to be America. I mean, it just
yeah.
it kills me the difference from where we were with the someone was comparing it to the Iraq debate.
Mm-hmm.
Remember all the like everybody was behind that and it was a pack of lies.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, it just is, I mean, the whole thing makes me, and arguments on both sides, when they go, oh, you know, what about retaliatory strikes? It's like, well, I understand that, and yet you go, well, that's like saying I'm not going to punch the bully because he might punch back. I mean, and that's the problem, is you don't know what's going to happen. But I do think that we have to be honest about saying that taking no action is an action. It's not necessarily the peaceful action. It's anyway. So lots to talk.
Are there
about,
options besides military options?
Well, it seems like we've tried all those. You know, I mean that's the problem.
Well, one thing that Kucinich brought up that's at the UN inspectors this is a week ago, but UN inspectors are still completing their independent evaluation. So it's kind of like the George Bush situation where we were ignoring the
what the UN is, right. is investigating.
So yeah, it's not exactly the same, but still.
Well, Ruud Punda joined us in a few minutes, and he said the whole Iraq comparison is bull, which I agree. All
but
right.
In that instance, that's very similar to what
it is.
This is one of those issues where everybody is right. Seriously, the people that go read Sarah Palin's latest dopey thing and go, oh, okay, well, that sounds smart. Oh, God. 18 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I got her number off the men's room stall. 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller.
If you have half a brain.
Not sure I've ever had a pina colada.
Really?
Jim Ward was doing the backstroke in a Fukushima pina colada
off
Pismo Beach with his lovely wife.
Janiqua.
Right.
Yes.
What
also
is her name?
Janice.
Oh, Janice, right. I've actually forgotten her original name. We've gone through so many.
Why? Shame.
Exactly. All right, 24 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free for any rude pundit coming up. Mm-hmm. Eric Bollard at the top of the hour, Reverend Jim Wallace. Lots to talk about regarding Syria. Jim, I was saying at the top, it's, you know, it's interesting when you can think, boy, that Rand Paul's a douche nozzle, but a couple things he said made sense.
Yeah, actually,
And Sarah Palin made sense only because she stole it from the internet.
Right.
Let me get this straight, you know, Syrians bomb Syria, and we're bombing whatever.
Yeah, that was a meme that went around two
right.
weeks ago.
Look what
and
I just thought of also,
oh,
too.
Oh, by myself, that... just thought that Syria, I'm doing Syrian things for the Syrian people and right. Syrian way, and also...
But I winked when I said it, and,
to ya.
And made it sound quippy.
Exactly. Hmm. No, Rand Paul was actually making sense for a while. And,
yeah,
which
I
is...
know. But, you know, again, Jim, I was saying that, you know, does it make a difference when it's Nancy Pelosi and Barbara Boxer urging, you know, why it's important. I mean, and I posted this over the, tell me what you think, Jim. I don't know if you saw this. We posted on Facebook when I was gone, but Nicholas Kristof, who, again, no hawk, New York Times, this was, he wrote another great piece yesterday, but He wrote a piece about the right questions on Syria. He said critics of American military action in Syria are right to point at all the risks and uncertainties of missile strikes, and they have the American public opinion on their side. But for those of you who oppose cruise missile strikes, what alternative do you favor? It's all very well to urge the UN and the Arab League to do more, but that means Syrians will continue to be killed at a rate of 5,000 every month. Involving the International Criminal Court sounds wonderful, but it would make it more difficult to hammer out a peace deal in which Assad steps down. So what do you propose other than we wag our fingers as a government uses chemical weapons on its own people? So far, we've tried peaceful acquiescence, and it hasn't worked out well. The longer the war drags on in Syria, the more al-Qaeda elements gain strength, the more Lebanon and Jordan are destabilized, the more people die.
And who are the people we're supporting?
I do think it weakens the presidency and it weakens America for future things. I really do, because they think we're not going to do anything because of whether it's this dysfunction of our government or hatred of Obama from the right that they aren't going to ever vote for anything he's for. I mean, he said, blah, blah, blah. It's admirable to insist on purely peaceful interventions, but let's acknowledge the likely upshot is that we sit by as perhaps another 60,000 Syrians are killed over the next year. A decade ago, I was aghast that so many liberals were backing the Iraq war. Today, I'm dismayed that so many liberals disillusioned by Iraq seem willing to let an average of 165 Syrians be killed daily rather than contemplate missile strikes that just might, at the margins, make a modest difference. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which tracks the number of dead in the civil war, is exasperated at Western doves who think they're taking a moral stance. He said what's emerging in the U.S. and Britain is now a movement that is anti-war in form but pro-war in essence. In other words, how is being pro-peace in this case much different in effect from being pro-Assad and resigning oneself to the continued slaughter of civilians? To me, the central question isn't what are the risks of missile strikes on Syria. I grant those risks are considerable, from errant missiles to Hezbollah retaliation. It's this. Are the risks greater if we launch missiles or we continue to sit on our hands? Let's be humble enough to acknowledge that we can't be sure of the answer and that Syria will be bloody whatever we do. He just goes on to say, yet on balance, while I applaud the general reluctance to reach for the military toolbox, it seems to me in this case the humanitarian strategic risks of inaction are greater. We're on a trajectory that leads to accelerating casualties, increasing regional instability, growing the strength of al-Qaeda forces, and more chemical weapons usage. Anyway, he just talks about women, because a lot of us are getting emails from groups that we agree with, generally on everything. Women's group, he says, he admires. V-Day said, experience shows us military interventions harm innocent women, men, and children. Really? Sure, sometimes they do, as in Iraq. But in both Bosnia and Kosovo, military interventions save lives. The same was true in Mali and Sierra Leone. The truth is, there's no glib or simple lesson from the past. We need to struggle case by case for an approach that fits each situation. And I was saying about Bill Clinton, saying Rwanda was the biggest regret of his presidency, that he didn't intervene, that he didn't do something.
But Rwanda wasn't attached to the Middle East, which is this huge powder keg that can go off, you know. And Kosovo wasn't attached to the Middle East either.
Yeah, I mean, I got to say, it's hard to watch those videos over the weekend that the president...
We cannot turn a blind eye to images like the ones we've seen out of Syria. Failing to respond to this outrageous attack would increase the risk that chemical weapons could be used again.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean, Jim. I was saying you can't compare it to Iraq in the sense that there were no weapons. He had no chemical weapons. I mean, that's the difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We know for a fact that chemical weapons were used. It's still a little bit up in the air.
Right, so the whole smoking gun mushroom cloud, it's actually more real in this case than it is, you know. Yeah. Let's do a quick one here. Marlon in New Hampshire, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Marlon.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, go ahead.
I have a solution.
Okay.
Why not let the French attack for us? Everyone else lets us do their dirty work for them. Why don't we just let the French do this one?
Well, you know, I that's the problem. It's like, you know.
The French historically don't have much
experience in winning wars. Wouldn't that be something? Yeah. Would the right wing still be calling them cheese-eating surrender monkeys?
Well, they were the ones who...
yeah, yeah.
They took it over for us. Well,
the world is upside down.
We took over for them in Vietnam. When they left.
Well, yeah, because they screwed that up.
They helped us win the revolution. But anyway, that's not important now. We'll talk to Rude Pundit next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, Stephanie Miller.
You are the height of just too muchery.
That's me. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 34 minutes after the hour. I was finishing up Nick. This is Nick Nicholas Christoph's piece last week. The right questions on Syria that we posted yesterday is pulling the curtain back on Syria. Also, some interesting stuff. And I just want, because I honestly think everybody has valid points on this, but the right questions on Syria, finishing up that one, he said the Syrian government also lately has had the upper hand, and fighting airstrikes might make it more willing to negotiate toward a peace deal to end the war. Missile strikes on his airports might also degrade his ability to slaughter civilians. With fewer aircraft, he may be less willing to drop a napalm-like substance on a school, as his forces apparently did last month. A brave BBC television crew filmed the burn victims with clothes burned and skin peeling off their bodies, interviewed an outraged witness to ask those opposed to military action, you're calling for peace. What kind of peace are you calling for? Don't you see this? And I mean, I'm just saying, as a liberal and as a humanitarian, I hope someone that's a humanitarian, I get that argument too.
Right. But there's another wrinkle. This from Reuters. Syrian forces may have used gas without Assad's permission. This according to the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the German CIA. So wow. It just gets more and more complicated.
Yeah. And Rude Pundit with some great points as usual.
Lee Papa, the Rude Pundit. Pundit.
Good morning, Rudeness.
Good morning. Can't we just talk about Breaking Bad? I mean,
this is pretty bad.
So, it's pretty bad. Is it going to get worse?
Worse, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I was saying, Ruud, I don't know what's being a Libra that can't make a decision, but I can listen to John Kerry and Barbara Boxer and Nancy Pelosi and go, they've got a point. And then when the universe, you know, the parallel universe is complete, when I go, well, that makes sense, Sarah Palin. What? This is just...
I haven't made my leap into that bed yet.
Yeah.
But you wrote a great piece defending not wanting war with Syria. But, you know, and you make the point that I've been making. Let's stop comparing this to the bull that led to the Iraq war. And I just, in the way that only you can say, you said there's a major piece missing that invalidates the comparison. See, while George W. Bush and his scabby band of syphilitic liars... Whether we have no information whether they all had syphilis or not, but
however, madness is one of the things that happens when you have syphilis for a long time.
That is true.
Scabby band of syphilitic liars. Come on, who else has called the Bush administration that? Only Rude.
Thank you.
They were willing to us into a disease complacency on war. They also gave our fears a reach around and a nice rub and tug. The Bush administration told us that Iraq's possession of weapons of mass destruction was an apocalyptic crisis for the U.S., that nukes and germ bombs would be heading our way. Oh, and Iraq was involved with Al-Qaeda and, well, maybe 9/11. So you make the point that people that voted for it could say they were too scared and freaked out. They thought blah, blah, blah. But again, based on a pack of lies, right?
Right. And not only that, but, you know, at the time, Iraq wasn't, yes, it was a repressive, incredibly repressive regime that was treating the Shiites just, you know, essentially as an enemy population. But there wasn't a civil war going on, and there wasn't a, you know, large scale, slaughter of people going on. So that to me is why this comparison, the comparison of course is there in that, oh, do we trust the information that we're getting? But that's where it ends for me.
Somebody,
comparing Iraq.
And Rude, somebody wrote another great piece, Coalition of the Unwilling. I mean, you look at all of the countries that, yes, Iraq seems like a good idea. And all the people here that voted for it.
Yep.
And, you know, meanwhile, you know, now we have, like you say, nobody or France, and and this may be more real. You say the other historical reference that needs to be canned is the Hitler nonsense. You say comparing the despicable use of chemical weapons in the Civil War to the Nazi concentration camps, as Kerry and others have done, is like comparing apples and 6 million corpses. Random chemical bombings do not a Holocaust make. And I think in general we should cease with Hitler analogies. However, you know, the point is at least as valid that only two people have used chemical weapons like this, right?
Also, Assad is a doctor, and so is Dr. Mengele.
Well, I mean, as long as we're not talking World War One, sure, I guess we can say that only two have used it. Three now, I guess.
But I think the point is just you don't know at what point appeasement leads to this, that, and it's obviously he's not Hitler yet.
But
you
again,
know what I mean,
Syria is not making any kind of waves about attacking another country. So again, this is all getting into geeky history stuff. You know, we're letting facts intrude on a really good analogy.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, here's what I love about the piece you wrote, because a friend of mine was saying this, that, you know, she totally gets not wanting to do this and all of the good reasons not to do this, but at least be honest about it. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily pro-peace is what I was just quoting, I think, Christoph. And you at least are honest about it. You say when the rude pundit says Syria, he does so with full knowledge that the Assad regime may very well be responsible for horrific attacks on citizens. He does so with full knowledge that over 100,000 people have died in the civil war. He does so with full knowledge that the refugee crisis is mind-blowingly enormous. He doesn't want those people to die or suffer. He doesn't want to blow another few hundred billion dollars on another war. Not now, not with an economy that's still crawling and when it should be walking upright. And, you know, and then you mentioned, obviously, the Afghanistan, the other
wars. We are still at war.
Yeah.
And it's also the case, and a lot of people have made this, on both sides have made this, that, you know, we're talking about doing, what are they saying, 3 days of bombing. And to me, that takes away, I mean, if you're going to do it, you know?
Right.
Go in there and just, and you know what, if you're going to wreck the joint well. But, even though I'm opposed to it, let me just say that. But if you're going to do it big. But if you do 3 days of bombings, does Assad then have some kind of threat that this is going to happen again? Does that prevent him from using weapons in the future? And again, as you know, we contort ourselves into knots here. You know, the AP has an article out today saying that, you know, the Obama administration really has not offered definitive proof
exactly
to the public. And this is not to mention that, you know, the number they keep citing of dead is not a number that's confirmed by most of the organizations on the ground. They say over 1,400, the highest number from the group, the Syrian group you just quoted, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, says 500.
Wow.
And
that's
so,
a big difference.
Yeah, it's a huge difference.
I have a quote from an Irish newspaper where Obama says, "What we now have is evidence that chemical weapons have been used in Syria. We don't know how they were used, when they were used, who used them. We don't have a chain of custody that establishes who used
right.
them." At the same time, saying we have proof that Assad directly ordered the use of chemical weapons. Well, which is it?
Right.
But, you know, Brood, the last point you make on your second posting, sorry, but Syria, is you say sorry, but Syria, when we don't have to tell school teachers to take a pay cut and we can assure the children of Chicago they won't get shot, we can talk about being the moral authority of the world. You know, while I agree with that, the point about whataboutism is Republicans aren't going to do anything about that no matter what we do about Syria or
well,
not, right?
Exactly. And you know what? I will say, you know, taking a step back and just being an observer of the politics of this,
yeah.
Yes, I know this has a good chance to damage the Obama administration, Obama as president,
yeah.
if this doesn't pass. However,
and America, by the way, and our credibility and our security. I really believe that.
Well, I don't think it damages our. Did you say our security?
I think it may. I mean, what do you do when you have a president? I mean, it's not only this president who they hate. It's the office of the American presidency. You know,
right.
Don't you think around the world it weakens that?
I don't think so. I think that because this is not about first of all, we're not going in there to stop a genocide. You know, that's, again, there was I think you brought up the Sudan earlier.
Right.
That was to try to go in and stop a genocide from happening.
Right.
This is so narrowly tailored that frankly, this isn't anything different than when Clinton would, you know, throw missiles into, whatever nation he was throwing missiles into to try to, you know, get Al-Qaeda. But there's the thing, politically, the thing that I find really fascinating is we get to find out what Republicans really want. Do they love Israel or do they hate Obama more?
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's
yeah.
like because everything for them is about hating the president and obstructing him, you know that a lot of this is just based on that.
Right.
You know, some congressman said, oh, you know, well, my constituents mostly say, don't you go along with the president. I can't stand him. It's like, no matter what it is.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so it would be funny that, you know, after all this time of you know, didn't the last election, the last two elections, wasn't it about who loves Israel more?
Right.
And,
oh, no, they're all over the hypocritical road on this.
Oh, I know.
Come on.
The Republicans just kept hammering Obama.
Yeah, since when have they met a war they didn't like?
Right.
Republican, really?
Right. And, you know, when the last time they met a war they didn't like? It was Bosnia.
Right. And this is not a war, by the way. Whatever you agree or disagree, this is not war. I mean, this is, you
well,
know,
I think that...
George Bush, that was war. That was shock and awe, and we're going to...
That was boots on the ground.
Yeah.
Right, but again, remember, we were promised early on in that it was going to be over quickly, that we were going to, you know, that it was going to be no problem, that it was gonna, wasn't going to cost us anything. I mean, think about all the things we got promised in that game.
Yeah, well...
And, you know, and you're talking about unintended consequences. I mean, you know, of not going to war, well, then we've got the unintended consequences, of course, of breaking the item in the pottery barn.
Yes. Well, let's end on something that makes me happy, as usual, and that is your post, Obamacare is going to murder Republicans. speaking of violence. But, I mean, this is part of my point about what about is Republicans don't want you to have health care. They don't want you. Have, you know, any of this stuff. I mean, it's not like they're going to suddenly vote for that kind of stuff if they vote against Syria. But you say at some point after October 1st, Obamacare is going to saunter into a Republican congressional caucus meeting and stone cold murder the out of everyone there. Obamacare is going to strangle John Boehner until he turns a deep persimmon color.
Isn't he already?
You say as far as the GOP is concerned, the full implementation of the Affordable Care Act is their appointment with the executioner. That's why they've desperately attempted to defund, discredit, disappear the thing. As you talk about, right, all the times to voting to overturn it.
Oh, yeah.
Debt ceiling, blah, blah, blah.
Have we gotten to, okay, Obama, we'll give you your Syria vote if you defund Obamacare yet?
I bet someone's thinking it. But you say on October 1st, the health insurance exchange is open and people can start shopping and discover for themselves that Obamacare won't rape their dogs, kill their parents, and eat their children's hearts while Kenyan drums beat savagely in the background. And that's the Republicans' biggest fear, right?
Right. You know, because if people end up liking Obamacare, if all of a sudden they realize, wait a minute, when I get pneumonia, I don't have to die.
Right.
Then that completely undoes the Republican ideology about government interference in your life, and the government programs are going to naturally be bad for the population.
Right, as you say, if the fundy yahoos, gun fillators, and racist jackals decide they like having their infections treated by doctors without paying thousands of dollars for it, then your ideology is dead, murdered by Obamacare.
Yep. It's, I mean, you know, it really, and that's one reason why they keep desperately trying to get rid of it. And you know, yes, they're responding to, you know, the people they've gotten all head up in their districts about it. But they're also, you know, if this works, I mean, you know, it's sort of like becomes the thing, like the guy that had the sign, keep your government hands off my Medicare.
Right. Well, you say it all comes to when some racist jackal in Arizona can get that weird mole checked. And years down the road, everyone will just expect Obamacare to be there like Medicare. And
yep.
Then it will have been their idea.
Oh, exactly. then they'll reclaim it. Well, of course, it was Massachusetts and Mitt Romney that did it.
Right. And on a happy note, as you end, Republicans will be drowned by Obamacare like so many rats in a weighted sack chucked into the river of their own bull. Just awesome.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Welcome back.
Yay. All right. Thank you, Rudeness. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
All right. 47 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
There's a tea party in her pants, and you're invited. Call now, 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 51 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. The president will be on every network today, all day.
Yes, even HGTV. No, right.
He might
even
be
network.
Selling zirconiums with Joan Rivers somewhere. 52 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. As we were saying, a lot of people we respect, actually on both sides of the aisle on this, make some sense. It's almost like, literally, when Sarah Palin can make sense, even though she stole it from someone.
It gets more complicated when we're supporting some rebels there and not others.
Right, and that's even disturbing. It's just and somebody wrote another great piece in the New York Times, Jim, about the babble we don't need. Because a lot of this, it becomes just like a reality show. Like, oh, is this going to be good for Marco Rubio in 2016 or Hillary Clinton, or is it going to be? And it's like
it's a little more important than that.
Yeah, exactly. That it deserves at least a serious, thoughtful discussion. And people are making good points, I think, you know, all around. This one, Chris, you sent me, not sure where it's from, Coalition of the Unwilling by Christopher Dickey.
Uh-huh.
Said those who do nothing to end the slaughter are as complicit as those who brandish their weapons.
Daily Beast.
Right. There comes a time when there is nowhere to hide from the shared responsibility of humanity. Again, you know, and Reverend Jim Wallace, who we obviously respect, I was curious to see what he would think. And he said, you know, morally this demands a response. He obviously doesn't think military is the right response, but I don't know what is. And then there's people that are just dummies. Let me see, where's my... There's some people who are just selfish dummies.
Yeah.
And they don't get a place at the table.
What about my needs? What about me?
This was from the New York Times on Friday. Proudly patriotic but skeptical on a Syria attack. They went to Waynesburg, Pennsylvania. You know who is ruining America currently, Jim? And Chris?
Who?
Dan and Melinda Delaney.
I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're with.
I think they're down in that Pennsylvania area.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Proudly patriotic but skeptical on Syria. Dan and Melinda Delaney, 51 and 49, were having a drink to celebrate their third anniversary. It's going to be a Red Dawn situation, Ms. Delaney said, referring to the film about a Russian takeover of the United States.
They brought you up a that? C. Thomas Howell movie as a reference point.
As you do.
Hang on. Melinda's got a couple other points she'd like to impart to you over her cocktail.
All right.
You see that movie? They're going to come over here on boats, on planes, and take over. Who's going to defend us? We're sending them all overseas. Okay. So Melinda's fear is that, because Patrick Swayze no longer here, of course, to save us, that Russia will be coming on planes.
We have the biggest military in the world.
Yes.
Right. And so because we
for peace
would send missiles to Syria for 2 days, there would be literally no one here.
Right.
We're sending them all over there. And Russia, you see, will be coming to take us over. Okay.
Well, China makes all the computer chips and all military planes. So
really, Melinda? Really?
That's kind of alarming. That may be like a kill switch. They can do like,
well, that's at least a little more plausible. That is a little more plausible than Melinda's Red Dawn theory.
Yeah. C. Thomas Howell is not involved.
No.
In any way.
If you have to cite any movie that C. Thomas Howell was involved in, you are dope.
You don't get a seat at the table.
No, you do not. Dummy. Let's go to Les in Nevada. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Les.
Good morning.
Hi.
I was going to say that I think that we should probably just do what the president asked, because I think he's probably right. But what I really want to say is that, you know, everything from the revolt against the British to freeing the slaves, women's rights, banking laws, consumer protection laws, safety laws for minors, water purity laws, all the Social Security, all these good things that have been done in this country have been done by progressives.
Yep.
And the conservatives have stood back and slowed progress and held this country back like they're doing right now.
Yeah.
They are hurting the country.
Let's be honest, Les, a lot of people on the right just want to do this to hurt Obama, just to hurt Obama, to vote against him, to weaken him. And I just think it not only weakens him, it weakens, you know, the office of the presidency. It weakens America, I think. You know, I mean, you know what I'm saying, Jim? Don't you think there is, whether it's Iran or whoever, to go, oh, they're never going to back this president to do anything. So, I mean, it just kills me. That's what this article in the Daily Beast, the Coalition of the Unwilling, how many people supported George Bush?
Right.
It's completely illegal, unnecessary war. I mean, anyway, he says, when President Obama met with leaders of the world's most powerful nations at the G20 in Russia last week, seeking support for military action against Assad, he found himself surrounded by a mob of bystanders, a coalition of the unwilling, as it were. The French president appears to be entirely on board. The rest of Washington's old allies essentially are content to let the U.S. go into such action without them, which I was saying is also the other irony after Iraq, right?
Yeah.
which is the point he makes. By comparison, the bitter debate about the Iraq invasion looks almost positive. At least people took clear positions. The George W. Bush administration would allow no middle ground. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Some old friends, like France, ironically, tried bravely to stop what they figured was a pointless and potentially disastrous war. Hey, there's that. Maybe the French are right again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
They were right to get out of Vietnam.
American congressmen itching for a fight declared they would no longer eat French fries, only freedom fries. Other
First
countries,
all,
like
Belgian.
Britain, charged into combat alongside Americans. Almost 50 nations signed on to the so-called Coalition of the Willing and lent at least some small degree of support. Of those, only 10 are on record now as backing proposed American action against Syria. I mean, and I'm not saying, I don't know. You know, again, there's too many unknowns, so that's not saying this is the right thing. But boy, a lot of people signed on for the wrong thing, and it's just, anyway. All right, we will talk to Eric Bollert, Reverend Jim Wallace, much more as we continue 58 minutes after the hour. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, back from vacation, 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere, stephaniemiller.com. Check it out. You can email us all there, executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. Off to a rousing discussion about Syria this morning, and what's more fun? Okay. we're going to have Reverend Jim Wallace on. Interesting, we were talking about this one, the Coalition of the Unwilling and the Daily Beast. Just finishing some points. What Obama found with his attempts to respect the nuances of his allies' concerns is that given a chance to choose between competing evils, most people prefer to climb on the fence. The air war being planned against Syria might push Assad toward negotiations, or it might worsen the already horrific situation on the ground. Inaction, on the other hand, gives the Syrian tyrant carte blanche to use weapons of mass destruction that will annihilate his enemies while driving millions more innocents out of their homes and off of their lands. Anyway, he just ends by saying the most moral position is to say you are with peace and against all war, but that is different from apathy, which is what most of the world and much of the American public appear to feel at this moment. As Heaney knew, there is nothing moral about that. When war comes, and it has and it will, there is no such thing as innocent. And you were saying this morning, Chris, a CNN poll shows 8 in 10, that's almost 80%, Jim, of the American public against this. We will see if, you know, what the president says either today on TV or tomorrow night makes any difference in that whole debate. All right. Our good friend Eric Bollert is here. Eric Bollert from Media Matters for America, doing the Lord's work as usual.
Eric Bollert.
Come on, baby.
Eric Bollert.
Into the right-wing world. I don't know what that means. Eric Bollert from Media Matters, whom we love.
Bollert.
Good morning, Eric Bollert.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Good, thanks.
Love your tweets as usual. You said kind of says it all. New York Times, GOP is opposing Obama en masse on Syria based entirely on principle. No reference to the last 5 years of obstructionism. Hashtag liberal media. I mean, that's part of this debate that you can't ignore, right? Is they?
Oh, but we are. But the press is, yes. The the entire Republican Party, particularly the House Republicans, have overnight turned into dovish peaceniks.
Yeah.
And there was a piece on the Times over the weekend. News report, Republicans are listening to their constituents, and they kind of focused on one in particular. I can't remember which Republican now. And the Times assured us, you know, he was a very serious guy, and he wasn't a Tea Party crazy, and he's tried to work at the White House in the past. And
right.
Just one example of Republicans just can't, you know, Republicans who have never said no to a war in the history of their party.
Right. Ever.
They just cannot, you know, pull the trigger on this.
Well,
and one of the things I pointed out. And
speaking of triggers,
was,
by the way, as you said, yes, you mean like 90% of the American people wanted background checks, and they so were listening to their constituents
right.
then, weren't they?
That was that New York the Times headlines, you know, Republicans say constituents don't want war. I'm like, oh, okay, so now Republicans listen to the voters. Republicans are in touch with the masses and write background checks, 92, 93%. 3% in favor of in January. Republicans wouldn't even allow a vote in Congress on that. But, you know, to me, you know, this has been one of the, you know, the telltale signs of the Beltway Press under Obama, which is you just turn a blind eye to this radical obstructionism, and which clearly explains the 80 or 90% of why Republicans are suddenly opposed to war and opposed to Obama. But the Times and everyone else just pretends, oh, gosh, you know, they're listening to the voters. What else could, you know, that must explain all of this.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you say, remember when the House used to refuse to authorize the Kosovo military expert for Clinton, and that vote completely ruined Clinton presidency? Hashtag me neither.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it is, you know, it will be interesting to see how this plays out, Eric.
And yeah.
No, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, and there should be a debate. And as I pointed out, you know, I think anti-war Democrats are being entirely consistent. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the Republicans which have basically flushed five decades of foreign policy, you know, down the memory hole in the last week that probably needs some explanation from the press, but we're not getting it. And my point on Kosovo, you know, tweeting that, you know, this almost hysterical / juvenile obsession with what if Obama loses his vote? What if he loses his vote? His presidency is over, you know.
Yeah.
He's weakened the presidency for, I mean, it's just so over the top. And oh, by the way, the House refused to back Clinton when he sought authorization to bomb Kosovo. And last time I checked, Clinton left office with a 67% approval rating. Mm-hmm. A little context, a little history would be nice. But, you know, as I pointed out yesterday on Twitter, you know, Nicholas Kristof wrote a very interesting column. And my point was it's almost unheard of because he wrote a column about Syria that's not all about Obama. It's not all about political minutiae. He wrote a column
that's
actually about Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that I've been quoting him actually the last 2 weeks. But, yeah, yesterday's was pulling the curtain back on Syria. And just, I think, Eric, it is a really serious debate that you're right.
Yeah.
It's like this is really serious times now. And this reflexive Obama derangement syndrome, I have said earlier in the hour, I think it weakens the presidency and it weakens America. And you allude to that. You tweeted, you said, seriously, how are the GOP and the right-wing media ever going to mount a PR campaign for war versus Iran after this week of caterwauling about Syria? And then you say, I realize everyone's supposed to hyperventilate about Obama and the vote and what it means, but the box GOP has put itself in is monumental.
Yeah, all of that is not on the radar. You know, Boehner, Cantor, Bill Kristol, AIPAC, all of them going all in support of a strike. None of them, you know, there's no discussion about what it might mean to the leadership of the Republican Party, what it might mean to Republicans' relationship with Israel, with neocons, what it might mean if they ever want to try to launch any sort of, PR campaign or an actual war with Iran. None of that matters. You know, this is, it's all about Obama. It's all about what he...
Well, but I think that it implies the other question, Eric, is does this embolden Iran, you know, because they think this president is so hogtied, basically, by the right wing in this country, they're not going to let him do anything. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, but the idea that Republicans can, you know, the conservative movement... can ever now demand that, you know, the United States launch a war with Iran, based on the fact that they're basically saying, you know, no military intervention. You know, my other point, that I made last week was, you know, how do you turn Republicans against military intervention? You know, you put a Democrat in the White House. Basically, as long as there's a Democrat in the White House, we're never going to go to war again. You know, and as I pointed out, that's a silver lining. I mean, if you want to look on the bright side of all this, basically that's the Republican position. If there's a Democrat in the White House, we will never go to war again.
If you're really anti-war, right.
If that's the box they're going to put themselves in.
Yeah, right. If you're really anti-war, let's make sure we never get another Republican in the White House. Right.
And of course, and people on Twitter said, don't even expect any consistency if and when, you know, there's another Republican in the next near future. You know, they'll just abandon all of this and they forgot all about it.
And this is the perfect example, your article, a right-wing media star is born, Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
Yeah, you say I'm not surprised that Putin has emerged as the new right-wing media darling. I mean, this is what I mean about what it does not even seem like we are one America anymore. They literally, as you say, casting a wide net and always willing to promote whoever will mount attacks against President Obama. Conservative commentators have recently reached all the way to Moscow to embrace their latest champion, Russian President Vladimir Putin. The more he criticizes Obama for wanting to mount military strikes against the Syrian government for gassing its own citizens, the more Putin's comments are cheered by conservatives here.
And there's the incredible gay thing too, which they probably
yeah right.
And, yeah, they love that. They love exactly.
You know, this dovetails into their anti-gay campaign in August, which the right-wing media in America loved, but thought Patrick Buchanan thought he was trying to reestablish a moral compass in Russia by campaigning against gays. So yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's always been whoever will hate Obama as much as we do. It's kind of an update on the friend of your enemy or whatever that is.
Yeah.
They will find any. So Assad gasses his own people. Putin backs Assad, and conservatives in America cheer Putin.
Russia
even come up with this? Connect those dots.
And Putin was head of the KGB in East Germany.
Yeah, and you quote Rush Limbaugh, who says, "Who do I believe? Vladimir Putin or Barack Obama and John Kerry?" Limbaugh appeared to be impressed by the fact that Russia had compiled a 100-page report blaming Syrian rebels for the chemical attacks, not Assad. Limbaugh told his listeners, "Now I don't know about you, but what does it feel like to have to agree with a former KGB agent?" Well, it means you're an Oxycontin-riddled gas bag.
Yeah,
that's what it means.
Once Putin called John Kerry a liar last week, his stock just soared. Sean Hannity and others, they're like, Putin's saying what we feel in our heart of hearts. It's crazy. And there's a lot of weird, strange bedfellows emerging last week or so, and a lot of it's kind of disturbing, but, that's definitely one of them. Vladimir Putin is going to be your new poster.
Right. Fox News, Ralph Peters, the military expert, quote unquote, he's in full swoon. He said he's a thug, but he's defending Christians and the other minorities in Syria. He presents himself as a real he-man, Putin, but he lives up to it. Oh, my God. Oh, so they have a man crush on Putin now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then in that same little bromance, he calls Obama gutless. They love Putin, and all he stands for is the leader of Russia, KGB agent, it's crazy. It's crazy, but again, this is one of the running themes. This is one of the defining definitions of Obama derangement syndrome. And again, all of it can be flipped in a switch. They will find whatever bedfellows they need to. Again, I mentioned AIPAC. AIPAC going all in on this lobbying effort for a strike. And the Republican Party has been wed to everything, domestically in terms of agenda that Israel has wanted. I mean, it's been very historical. They've been very open about that. Except now, because Obama wants a vote in Congress, and Congress has the chance to do damage to his presidency. So, long-term relationship with Israel thrown out the window, long-term suspicion of Putin thrown out the window because of this vote. It is what it is. They are driven by a base hatred for Obama. And that's what we've seen unfolding, particularly in the right-wing media.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff as usual, Eric. We will talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
I will say that Vladimir Putin's German is very good.
Yes. Oh, well, good.
Oh,
nice.
Well,
nice.
I got to give
nice.
Him that.
Nice.
Because he's head of the KGB in East Germany. So.
Nice. I think this headline out of Florida says it all. Man kills neighbors preemptively, cites Bush doctrine as defense.
Yeah.
So we will talk about that as we continue. 18 minutes after the hour. In what respect, Charlie? Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
We've got to keep up our strength for the fight against evil.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Turn me inside out and round and round.
Mm-hmm. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 23 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12. Yeah, the world is upside down.
Yeah.
Right? Republicans are against war and France is for it. What the? Shut the front door. What is happening? Frank Bruni, I was saying in the New York Times, a great piece yesterday, the Syria babble we don't. And his point, Jim, I think, is that these are serious issues. And
we have serious problems to solve. Right. And we need serious people to solve them.
Exactly, my point. He writes, the Syria babble we don't need. He just says our country is about to make the most excruciating kind of decision, the most dire, whether to commence a military campaign whose real costs and ultimate consequences are unknowable. So, but let's by all means discuss the implications for Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, Iowa, New Hampshire in 2016. Yay or nay on the bombing? Which is safer roll of the dice for a Republican presidential contender? Reflexively, sadly, we journalists prattle and write about that. We missed the horse race of 2012, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he just says that we want the men and women making it to be guided by principle, not politics. It surely doesn't help for journalists to lavish attention on electoral calculations and thereby send our own signal that we don't expect and voters shouldn't count on anything nobler. On a question of war and peace, we need nobler. We need the highest ground we can find. And I think that's, you know, we posted last week, Nick Kristof, the right questions about Syria. He had another, you know, great piece, I thought, yesterday. And it's just, boy, it's this one is not, to me, partisan. People are, like, all over the place in terms of, you know, what they feel about this. And, again, Reverend Jim Wallace is going to be on in, what, about an hour or so?
He's going to be on
coming up in 10 minutes. And he, I was just curious. He says this demands a moral response. He obviously doesn't think military is the right one. But once again, I just blame George Bush for everything. Well, and why not?
It also seems to me that the people who have access to the most intelligence on the situation are the ones who are for intervention in Syria. Dianne Feinstein, the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, the president, John Kerry, the vice
Senator
president.
Senator Boxer. Nancy Pelosi. I mean, it's just.
Well,
it's,
I don't know that they're privy to as deep of information as someone like Dianne Feinstein gets, who's the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee.
This headline out of Florida: man kills neighbors preemptively, cites Bush doctrine as defense. No kidding. Of course, in Florida.
Yeah.
A Florida man who shot three of his neighbors, killing two of them, has cited the state's infamous stand your ground law as his defense, but with a twist. He insists the Bush doctrine of preemptive war gives him the right to murder his neighbors before they murder him. Thanks again, George Bush. Thanks for all of this. I mean, I don't know above my pay grade, but it may be the right thing to do. There obviously are actual chemical weapons this time that could, if John Kerry is right, be a threat to America. But we clearly, you know, because of the Iraq war, we don't have a coalition.
Mm-hmm.
The lawyers say the man's neighbors had verbally harassed him in the hours leading up to the shooting. Could even be heard saying, we're going to get him. Woodward's attorney argued that imminent in their client's case should be legally defined as not only impending or ready to take place, but also expected, likely to occur, or hanging threateningly over one's head. As Jim used to say, threat-ish. Might not be an actual threat.
Yeah.
In their argument, the attorneys mentioned the Bush Doctrine as a justification.
Great.
Or preemptive.
Well, at least
attack.
This guy knew what the Bush Doctrine was. Sarah Palin didn't.
Right. In respect, Charlie. I've gathered that information. Get it back to you.
Yeah. In what respect, Charlie?
Oh, okay.
Oh, God. We still have to hear.
And the only reason she sounded vaguely like she had a point is because she stole it off the internet.
Right.
Oh, this is, here it is. So we're bombing Syria because Syria is bombing Syria, Sarah Palin wrote, in a rare comment that liberals might endorse. Her suggestion, let Allah sort it. Let Allah sort it out. Oh, by the way, speaking of stand your ground in Florida, George Zimmerman's wife is divorcing him. She is citing disappointment.
Disappointed.
Disappointment. She's very disappointed in him.
She probably does not agree with Mark O'Mara, his attorney, that he is.
He's awesome. He's so awesome. Yeah. Oh, she doesn't think he's awesome?
Guess not.
Okay. Well, that's awesome that she doesn't think that.
Guess not. Let's go to Ray in Vegas.
By the way, I saw that Mark O'Mara is being hired for punditry
by CNN.
Yes.
Right.
Oh,
right.
God.
Right. Yep. That's awesome. Ray in Las Vegas, awesome. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Ray.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Well, there was a comment he made which was kind of funny to me. He said bombing them isn't like war. Well, when they bombed Hawaii, was that kind of like not war either?
No, it was kind of war-ish.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for playing really bad analogies. Okay. I said, what I said is, what I was comparing it to was Iraq. That was shock and awe, boots on the ground. That was war. I mean, obviously, I get what this could lead to. I mean, could it, there's a million things that it could lead to, good or bad.
It's
I
very
suppose,
complicated.
But,
right. And, well,
but saying we're doing targeted missile strikes is not the same as saying we're going to war and the shock and awe and putting a...
It is an act of war, though.
His point was that we wouldn't appreciate it if Syria sent a few missiles over here just to
send
a message.
That would be considered an act of war.
Yes.
We wouldn't like it.
Yes,
it's not FedEx. It's
so I see his point.
Missiles.
Warheads. Nicholas Kristof, he's pulling the curtain back on Syria yesterday. He says if we were fighting an incomparably harsher dictator using chemical weapons on our own neighborhoods and dropping napalm-like substances on our children's schools, would we regard other countries as pro-peace if they sat on the fence as our dead piled up? So there's a million different ways to look at it or analogies. But Reverend Jim Wallace joins us next. He wrote a great piece for the Huffington Post. Talk to him on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
If I'm being cast in the role of bad girl, oddly titillating.
Uh-huh. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. All right, everyone is free to play their own game of really bad analogies, like that last guy.
All right.
That compared the bombing of Pearl Harbor to us doing a targeted...
I saw his point.
Okay.
Though.
No, friend of the Stephanie Miller Show, Melissa Fitzgerald, writes, we wouldn't like it if Assad bombed us, but if our government was gassing the... out of us, we might be pretty darn grateful. You know, it's just, you can't make an analogy that's, all right, let's just leave the analogies, particularly Iraq, because...
This thing's vastly more complicated than being presented.
Yeah, no, it actually is. And as I often do, I don't think what would Jesus do, I think what would the official preacher of the Stephanie Miller Show, Reverend Jim Wallace, do, and he joins us now. A great piece in the Huffington Post. Good morning, Reverend.
Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
I am fine, sir. You know, your piece was so thoughtful, as I expect from you. You said, respond, but how? What we're missing on Syria was the name of your piece. You said, when a head of state is responsible for the deaths of 100,000 of his people and has used chemical weapons against innocent civilians, the world needs to respond. You say, that there's it's a profound moral crisis that requires an equivalent moral response. Doing nothing is not an option, but how should we respond, and what are the moral principles for that response? And I think that's obviously what a lot of people are asking this morning, right?
The president, I'm really feeling a lot of empathy for the situation he's in. I think this is just cause. So this is a just cause. And I trust his intentions here. And we have to do something that is, Nick Kristof over the weekend called Syria the human suffering capital of the world.
Yep.
And then he said, I've covered most of them. So it is that kind of huge crisis. We have to respond in ways we haven't. So just not doing something isn't enough. The first thing, though, there are millions of refugees in Lebanon, 4 million people in the country, 1 million refugees. I was just in the UK. That's like 8 million refugees in the UK. There's 2 million refugees, and the world has not responded, has not mobilized around them. And I think there are other things we can do short so far of this last resort of military strikes, which I think could make the situation worse, not intentionally, but could make the situation worse, and I'm worried about those strikes.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I've been citing Nick Kristof all morning, too, because I thought he's written a couple really thoughtful pieces, and as you know, he writes, the United States can't ignore the world capital of human suffering, as you call it. You write, humanitarian organizations are calling this the worst crisis in 2 decades.
Right.
And yet, you know, as you know, Nicholas is for the military strike, and I get that you are not. I think it is... You say the international faith community should lead the way for global response to millions of people in deep distress and anger. How should we do that, Reverend?
Well, I don't hear really our leaders in the either political leaders or faith leaders talking about this is a huge crisis. Decades, this is the biggest one we've had for decades now, and I don't see us mobilizing the world. My two principles are these. One, you've got to first respond to the most vulnerable and those in the most jeopardy. That's our first response as people of faith and people of moral sensibility. Second is, how do we resolve this conflict? Nobody thinks there's going to be a military solution here. It won't happen, even with strikes or not strikes. how do we resolve this conflict? How do we surround this man, Assad? How do we surround him with international rejection? I would force a vote at the UN, even if the Russians and Chinese force them to vote for him, and then embarrass them. Put this man on trial at the court. Let's pressure this guy like we've never done anybody before. Let's exhaust those things first. Because military strikes now, they could escalate the conflict. They could create more civilian casualties. I don't want to see the story next week be an errant Tomahawk missile killing civilians.
Yeah.
And that's blatant.
Yeah, making their case. Right. I get you. And you were saying, and they're, you know, thereby losing us the moral high ground. But, you know, Reverend, what do you say? Because obviously a lot of the points you made, you see Nicholas Kristof has sort of countered those. Not that he was countering you, but you know what I'm saying? That, you know, he says we have tried, we exhausted that. The Russia and China have continually voted against this. Like, a lot of people say that we have exhausted all of those already. How do you, I mean, what would be different this time, I guess?
Well, Nick and our friends agree on most things. It's a prudential judgment that we're making here. Will military strikes right now have the impact that we'd like them to have? And I just am not convinced they will. In fact, mm-hmm. I don't think they will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there must be a UN vote. No matter what the Russians and Chinese might do, there must be, this has got to be brought to the world stage. This man must be shamed around the world for what he is. And even the French are saying now they want, they're our only ally, they want a 45-day delay to try some of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we must do those things first.
Let me ask you, is he capable of being shamed, though? I mean, that you know, implies a conscience that I'm not sure he has.
It doesn't imply his conscience. It talks about our exercising our conscience.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole world needs to shame this man and begin to reduce his options. I'm not sure how military strikes will do that. In fact, my concern is that he might retaliate, he might bring in other people just to stick a finger in our eye, then what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid that, I mean, this man must be removed from office. This man must be removed, put in a prison somewhere.
Yeah.
But how do we, there are no easy answers on the menu here. So it's,
there sure aren't. I mean, you know, Reverend, as you speak so eloquently on matters of faith, you say Jesus' call to be peacemakers takes us in a different direction than missile strikes. I believe the just cause being laid out against Assad is indeed a moral cause, and I trust President Obama and John Kerry's intentions around that cause, but I believe the military strikes now being proposed are not the best moral response to this moral crisis.
Right.
I mean, I think that sort of says it all. I mean, from your point of view, and you mentioned the Pope as well.
Well, what the Pope says is violence begets violence. And that's a principle that isn't just a spiritual, theological principle. I think the metrics show that. Stephanie, I think what we're stuck in here is in old habits. A big moral crisis. Therefore, we must respond militarily. Well, where have our military solutions, where have they worked over this last decade?
Well,
we've tried military solutions again and again.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say World War II. But that
World War II. I mean,
you got to go back a long way.
That's mm-hmm. a long way. Yeah.
So where do the military solutions, how do we know it's a big crisis, we have to respond militarily? Why? What does a big crisis, how do we go deeper, use more imagination, and do things we haven't done before economically, diplomatically, politically? We got to take this to a different level. And just going back to strikes, the purpose of which aren't clear, what they will accomplish isn't clear, and the danger of them escalating, I think, is too great. So I trust
mm-hmm.
Obama's intention and John Kerry. They're both friends. I call them friends.
Right.
I think this is the wrong response, and I think we have to go deeper and take more time and elevate our focus around the refugees and then shame this man internationally and see what that might open up. But we got to keep the moral high ground.
But you say that, you know, the risk of military strikes should not result in doing nothing in response to Assad. The clear moral case for intervention requires a more imaginative moral response than military action. And that's something I think you're right. We never think of that in terms of, you know, is there a more creative way, as you put it, I guess, to solve this?
And I want to say, I don't have easy answers either.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of us in the faith community are raising moral questions about the consequences of this military response to a moral crisis.
There was another wrinkle that was reported by Reuters. Syrian forces may have used gas without Assad's permission, their source being the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the German CIA. So that's just another complication. What if Assad wasn't really behind it?
Well,
the intelligence, you know, we always do the best we can. I want to say I hold him personally, morally responsible for the use of these chemical weapons, and that has crossed a line which must require response from us. There must be consequences. When Obama says there must be consequences, I agree with that. The question is whether military strikes will have the consequence we want to this moral crisis, or it might shift the debate to a whole other level and take the pressure off him.
Well, and you make a, you know, an interesting point we've talked about earlier this morning too, Reverend. You say Republicans who often favor military responses are still struggling with their response in light of their general opposition to the president. I mean, I think that too many of us, I mean, you and I have talked about so many issues as it regards that, you know, that, I mean, they're just so reflexively anti-President Obama that I think that, you know, they're not looking at this, how is America, can we solve this? They're saying, how can we make Obama look bad here? How can we weaken him, you know?
Well, the Republican hypocrisy here is enormous. First of all, most of them supported all the wars that left this nation now so war-weary.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't start by saying we were wrong about those other military solutions. They don't start by saying that. And then it's about how they can win, how they can win against Obama. Same in the UK when I was there. Who's winning, Cameron or Miliband, Labour, Tory? These are the wrong questions. We should all be focusing on the most vulnerable people in such jeopardy and then say, what is the best way to resolve this conflict and remove Assad, find the political solution the Syrian people finally will need? How do we protect the victims and resolve the conflict?
Yep, absolutely. Reverend, great thought-provoking stuff as always. Thank you so much. We will talk to you again real soon.
Great to be with you, Stephanie.
All right. Thank you, Rev. Reverend Jim Wallace, his piece on the Huffington Post.
And we linked to that piece up on your Facebook page.
Of course we did. Mm-hmm. And we say we. I had nothing to do with any of the actual work that goes on around here. It's interesting. He mentions Nicholas Kristof's piece, too. It was pulling the curtain back on Syria. But, you know, and again, two really thoughtful people that I really respect their opinions, and they have different solutions. They share a lot of the same thoughts on it. It's interesting. Thomas Friedman, right underneath Kristof's piece yesterday, he's against, you know, the strikes. He says, I still believe our response to Assad's poison gas attack should be arm and shame, as I wrote on Wednesday. But please do spare me the lecture that America's credibility is at stake here. Really, Sunnis and Shiites have been fighting since the 7th century over who's the rightful heir to the Prophet Muhammad's spiritual and political leadership, and our credibility is on the line, really? Their civilization has missed every big modern global trend, the religious reformation, democratization, feminism, and the entrepreneurial and innovative capitalism, and our credibility is on the line? I don't think so. We've struggled for a long time and still are learning to tolerate the other. That struggle has to happen in the Arab Muslim world, otherwise nothing we do matters. And that's the thing, you know, same thing as we talked about in Iraq, and Jim was saying, this is a lot more complicated than it, there's a lot of different factions there.
Well, I mean, Tommy from Columbus sent me a list of all the various people that live in Syria, Alawites, Arabic-speaking Kurds,
right.
Levantines, Imamis, Turkmen, Ismailis, Nusayris, Druze, Circassians, Armenians, Copts, Assyrians, Chaldeans, Turks, Aramaeans.
Right. And that's where Rand Paul, some stuff he said I agreed with, and a lot of it, it's like, he's sucking up to the religious right here. It's like, oh, only the Christians matter in Syria. It's like, oh, please, okay. All right, 46 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I love it. It's a fabulous program.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. A lot of people playing the home game this morning. Just responses to callers, to Reverend Jim Wallace. International. Somebody writes, the International Criminal Court could make Assad feel more caged, backed up against the wall, no way out for him. We've been at this for close to 2 years in Syria. Kosovo, our military would have helped in Rwanda, etc. I mean, there's so many like different ways to look at this. Norma in Arizona writes, I've seen John Kerry speak about war generally and know how he feels. He spoke so strongly about this. The president is not pro-war, and he speaks so strongly, I have to admit it, I trust them. And you guys had the opposite reaction. You felt like Kerry's heart wasn't in it. I
like
felt
he was being forced to say those words.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like that. I mean, And do I trust, like I say, do I trust him more when Senator Boxer and Senator Kerry say it? Yeah, I do. I do.
I just got a whiff of Colin Powell at the UN from John Kerry when he was
there. Really? Yeah. I did not.
I thought
not.
The same thing.
Mm-hmm. I thought because he's always been so, I mean, anti-war. I don't know. What's that?
Anti-war.
Yeah, exactly.
The man to be the last man to die for a mistake.
Yeah. It's just the minute Dick Cheney opens his creepy, crooked pie hole, you're like, shut up. You know, I mean, you're right. I mean, there is a different credibility when it's not someone that's for every war ever.
Right.
Not someone who's invested in the military and profiting from the war. People like Chuck Hagel and John Kerry, Chuck Hagel has said has holes in his shirt, meaning, you know, they've served.
Yeah.
He still has shrapnel on his chest.
Yeah. Dennis McDonough, White House Chief of Staff.
There is no doubt that this military action will degrade his capability, and it will send a very clear signal.
He was on Meet the Press yesterday saying that. Brevin Wallace talked about Nicholas Kristof. A lot of people were talking about that piece, pulling back the curtain on Syria. He says the United States can't ignore the world capital of human suffering, and he just, you know, he talks about, as Reverend Wallace said, the size and scope of this is not just any, you know.
What if our strikes cause more suffering?
Valid point. Yeah.
Could.
But, you know, he's talking about the rate of killings accelerating. In the first year, there were fewer than 5,000 deaths. Since July, there was only, quote unquote, 10,000. The number has since soared tenfold. A year ago, the UN calculations, there were 230,000 Syrian refugees. Now there's 2 million. In other words, there are many injustices around the world, from Darfur to Eastern Congo. Take it from one who has covered most of them. Syria is today the world capital of human suffering, which, you know, Reverend Wallace was saying he agrees with him on that. And then, by the way, as going to what you just said, Jim, he writes, skeptics are right about the drawbacks of getting involved, including the risk of retaliation. But, you know, I was also saying that argument makes me a little hinky, because it's like, okay, the bully's killing someone and we punch the bully, but what if the bully punches us back? You know, I mean, it's just, yes, of course there's that. And that's what Assad said this morning. He tells Charlie Rose, oh, the U.S. should expect every action in response to Syria strikes. Oh, by the way, he alluded including chemical weapons, which apparently he doesn't have, or he didn't use on. I mean, come on. President Assad warned if President Obama decides to launch military strikes on Syria, the U.S. and its allies should expect every action in retaliation. You should expect everything, not necessarily from the government, Assad said. Which, you know, they were saying he alluded to Hezbollah. He asked by Rose whether any retaliation for U.S. strikes could include the use of chemical weapons. Assad, whose government has never confirmed officially that it even has chemical weapons, said it would depend on, quote, if the rebels or the terrorists in this region or any other group have it. It could happen. I don't know. I'm not a fortune teller. Please.
Yeah, well, no, but that's a valid point. There are a lot of different factions there, and some of them do have access to weapons. Maybe not the rockets to launch them, but you can launch chemical weapons with shells as well.
Lewis in California. Hey, Lewis, welcome.
Oh, hi, Steph.
Hey, honey.
This is Loki Man from the chat room.
Oh, hello.
I've been following you since your days at the Itchy Kitty in Reseda.
Oh, thank you very much.
And,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. By the way, nice track.
Thank you so much.
I wanted to mention that I think the president is playing 3D laser avatar chess again, like he was during the because look at what David Cameron did in Britain. I mean, ever since 2010, it's been the president wants this, Congress says no. The president wants that, Congress says no. The president wants to invade Syria. What's Congress going to say?
No.
And so he just shrugs at the allies and says, hey, sorry, my hands are tied.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is, you know, making them go on record, I guess, you know, as Eric Bollard said, if nothing else, is exposing their unbelievable hypocrisy, going along with every war ever, and suddenly, what could it be, Jim? Not the black guys?
Not when the black guy's doing it.
Matt in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
Good
morning, fellow race traders. How are you?
Hello. Yes.
Yes, I'm calling to say that the week that you guys were gone, don't get me wrong, I love Hal Sparks, but you are the spark of the Stephanie Miller Show, Stephanie Miller.
Thank you.
That being said, I don't know if you guys have ever watched Family Guy, but there's a certain episode where they invade Iraq and then democracy kicks in, and it's literally like a tidal wave of just like democracy and everything changes in a second. I feel like that's what people think is going to happen to the U.S. if we invade Syria, except instead of democracy kicking in, we're going to have, like, everything from Syria just come over to the U.S. in, like, a giant wave, and within seconds we'll all be wearing turbans and those headdresses and everything. I mean, the people who say these things are the exact same people who were afraid that, oh, if Obama's elected president again, which he was, mind you, that we're going to turn into, like, Russia, or, like, in the Cold War or something. These people are nuts.
Yeah, well, that's what's her dope from Pennsylvania that I quoted earlier that was in the New York Times Friday.
Kathy Dirr,
you're
fired.
No, I'll tell you what. We do this. Russia's going to come. You seen the movie Red Dawn? Did you see Red Dawn?
Yeah.
You see Red Dawn?
No, but I've seen Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
It's going to happen. They're going to come over here, and there won't be nobody here because we send them all overseas. Russia's going to come over here.
They're going to send the fat tube the fat kid in the tube.
What's it? Patrick Swayze going to protect us? No.
Computer says no.
He's gone.
We're going to eat nothing but shawarma.
That sounds pretty good, actually.
Think about that.
Yeah.
What the hell is shawarma?
It's really good. Yeah. Chicken.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, right. I've had it. Okay.
Yeah, there's that restaurant here in L.A., Zanku Chicken. Have you ever?
Oh, it's good.
That's
right.
That's
okay.
What we'll be eating.
Okay. All right. Well,
okay. I'm good
so
with
bad.
That.
Come on down then. All right. 58 minutes after the hour, we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller is... Who is a babe, by the way? I must point this out.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, yeah. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12. Oh, we are still streaming at StephanieMiller.com. So people that were streaming got to hear my ginormous burp at the top of the hour.
Well, yeah. If you go to Ustream.tv/StephanieMiller, you will see the Ustream.
Right. Yes. Right. Until we are getting ready to announce our new television outlet. You get the burp. You get the burps when you're... Right.
And by the way, we don't have an announcement yet.
No.
I've been getting
Calm down.
Yeah, cards and letters.
We just got back from vacation.
It's not going to be vivid video.
No.
No,
we know
that.
It is not.
No, Stephanie will be doing...
Not because I didn't beg them.
Yeah.
Okay.
You'll be doing the show with a shirt on.
Right.
Nothing else.
Right.
But a shirt.
Yes, exactly. Pantless.
Yes.
All right. The good news is that we're back in town. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you heard the news? Stephanie's back in town.
Can I get a one?
What?
What? Back in town. Back in town. Hooray!
Mom is back.
Yeah.
The mooks are back.
What? Stephanie's back in town. Back in town.
Hooray!
Yes, you just got back today. Stephanie and the mooks get hip, hooray. They were off for a week, I took some Xanax and I'm okay. Thought I'd lose my cool, but I held it together. And I hope you enjoyed getting away from L.A. And your visit with your mama was okay.
Yeah.
And I hope the mooks had a good time on vacay. Now, Steffi, turn up the volume, go crazy! Woo-hoo! Back in town, mama's back in town, the mooks are back in town.
It was a pretty light news week.
Back in town.
Not a whole lot going on in the world.
You didn't miss much.
Thank you, Audra in Minneapolis. Yes, I was saying at the top of the show that I don't know what is going on in the world. Not only is it about World War III to start, apparently, dogs and cats. Rocky Mountain Mike, our dear friend, had a heart attack while we were on vacation, is in the hospital. Please send thoughts and prayers out to Rocky Mountain Mike. He's in bed joking, though, right, Chris? So he's not doing so badly.
Yeah, I traded some emails with him this morning.
He's
not doing that bad. But
no, he said he had a mild heart attack, and he is recovering. Unfortunately, it's not October 1st yet, so the Affordable Care Act has not kicked in. So he's in, voucher.
Where good doctors have bold ideas. Voucher Hospital.
Voucher Hospital. Brought to you by Ace Hardware Stuff.
Nurses to the nurses station.
Dr. Ryan.
Hello, Mary.
Well, I've got good news and bad news.
Yes?
First, the bad news. You need a bypass operation, and it costs $167,000.
And the good news?
The good news?
Yes.
I have a voucher here.
This is for $2 off an extra value meal at Wendy's.
Oh, wrong voucher. Here you go.
Okay, this is for $2 off a $167,000 bypass operation.
You're welcome.
Will Mary get her bypass operation? Will Dr. Ryan be able to use a voucher for 18 holes at Pebble Beach? Tune in tomorrow to Voucher Hospital.
And I'd also like to add that Rocky Mountain Mike is in the Ustream chat room right now talking to people. So just go to Ustream.tv/Stephanie Miller if you'd like to wish him well.
And I also was saying Sexy Liberal Tour Director Roland was supposed to go with Melissa Fitzgerald and I to Canyon Ranch, Miami.
Yeah.
And he instead decided to go get a bleeding ulcer and get an endoscopy in a hospital.
Oh, what fun.
So please send some thoughts and prayers out to Roland as well, who was not able to make it. We had a fabulous time in Miami. And then I did go visit my 90-year-old Republican mom in Charlotte.
Oh.
And I think her homemade vegetable soup could cure everything in the world, including the Syrian crisis.
Could it cure Roland's endoscopy or whatever it was?
No, endoscopy is a procedure.
Oh.
Where you take, put the camera down there.
Okay.
Right.
See what's going on down there.
Throat.
Oh.
Yes.
Pour some soup down there instead of a camera.
Right.
That might actually do something.
My mom's homemade vegetable soup is magical. It really is. All right. I will have to remember last time I sent her a thank you basket because she loves a damn lobster, first of all. And so I sent her like frozen lobsters, and then I also there was one with a surf and turf. It had a couple, you know, steaks in there. And she called and said, "Oh, Steffi, thank you for the lobster. There's balls. There's some balls in with it." I was like, "Mom, I think that's steak. Don't throw them out."
Probably very expensive steak.
Yes. And then later she goes, "Oh, Steffi, you were right. They weren't balls. Oh. It was steak. Thank you."
Right.
So I need to go buy some balls for my mom today.
I think GD lobster is a biblical thing because in the Bible,
yeah,
lobster is forbidden.
Right.
And so some,
in Leviticus.
Right. So some Catholics call it GD lobster.
Oh, yeah. We went out for some Friday night. Yeah.
How about GD cheese and pork sandwiches?
I don't think they call it that.
GD Hager slacks, poly blend.
Or GD meat on fry or beef on Fridays.
All right. So the president will be on 6 networks today and then the address of the nation tomorrow night.
Including the Food Network.
Really?
Yes.
You made that up.
I made that up.
Okay.
He might be on Nick at Night. Who can say? I don't know.
Who can say? All right. Because presently a new CNN poll showing that 8 in 10, nearly 80%, Jim.
That's very
against
close to that.
Against any intervention in Syria. Dennis McDonough, White House Chief of Staff, was on Meet the Press yesterday.
It is not boots on the ground. It is not an extended air campaign. It is not Iraq, Afghanistan, or Libya. This is a very concerted, concentrated, limited effort.
And John Kerry, talking about Assad yesterday as well.
He has one of the largest stocks of chemical weapons in the world. And at the moment, he has no intention of really negotiating. So it is certain that if he's threatened, he will use them again.
Oh, by the way, here's one way to get Republicans on board for boots on the ground.
Oh.
John McCain said no one wants American boots on the ground, nor will there be American boots on the ground because there would be an impeachment of the president if they did that. So now what you want to bet now they're all going to vote for not just intervention but boots on the ground because they're like, then can we move right to impeachment after that?
Not actual soldiers, just
for.
Boots.
Boots. Yeah, we're going to
boots.
Yeah.
Just drop some boots on the...
That'd be funny. Just
and
boots.
Maybe one of them will hit Assad on the head.
Right. Hoping, you know. Just what are the chances?
That would be a funny way to take out a leader.
Boink.
Boots in the air, boots on the ground, boots on your head.
There. That would be...
Problem solved. That'd
be
a big boot.
That'd be funny.
Okay. All right, John Kerry again. Yes.
This concerns every American's security. This is not remote. This is not some far-off place where something happened that's just one Arab sect killing another Arab sect on some internal fight. So are we supposed to turn away because the UN itself has become a tool of ideology or of individual nations and not say that the principle we put in place and have fought for all of these years is going to be thrown away? I don't think so.
This was, Jim, I was saying, that really the final parallel universe from Iraq. There's John Kerry speaking French with the leader of France. Both of us being four, the only ones four
la
going in.
La plume de ma tante est sur la table.
Right. And I'm like flashing back to Freedom Fries and screw the French and they won't come with us to Iraq and... And I don't know. I'm just saying this might be the right cause and the right thing to do. But now, because of George Bush and Iraq, nobody is going to go with us on this.
Did you just say my aunt's pencil is on the beach?
My aunt's pen is on the table.
On the table. Oh, I thought you said Sur la plage. Okay.
The pen of my aunt is on the table. A phrase everyone uses.
Absolutely.
Daily.
That's the first phrase they teach you in French.
And is the right still going to call them cheese-eating surrender monkeys, is all I'm saying. Who knows? John Kerry said the United States cannot be silent spectators to slaughter and argued that doing nothing is far more risky than responding. That soundbite we just played, because, Andrea Mitchell was asking him, how can we do this without the, support of whatever. John Kerry.
Those videos make it clear to people that these are real human beings, real children, parents being affected in ways that are unacceptable to anybody, anywhere, by any standards.
That's all I'm saying. At least this time, the chemical weapons are real, despite, whatever side of this you're on. And this is like somebody was it Nick Kristof that wrote about that this also doing nothing, Al-Qaeda could strengthen there. And we know there's chemical weapons when the Iraq war was just a load of crap,
all of it.
Senator Dianne Feinstein yesterday.
We received that this morning, and it's horrendous.
The video shooter.
The videos.
They had requested the entirety of the videos, and there were like 13 hours of it. It's just horrifying.
Nicholas Kristof, as everybody, citing this morning, including Reverend Wallace, about pulling the curtain back on Syria, he says skeptics are right about the drawbacks of getting involved, including the risk of retaliation, yet let's acknowledge that the alternative is, in effect, to acquiesce to the slaughter in Syria reaches perhaps the hundreds of thousands or more. But what about the UN? How about multilateral solution involving the Arab League? How about peace talks? What about an international criminal court prosecution? All this sounds fine in theory. But Russia blocks progress in the UN. We've tried multilateral approaches, and the Syrian leaders won't negotiate a peace deal as long as they feel they're winning on the ground. One risk of bringing in the International Criminal Court is that Assad would be more wary of stepping down. The UN can't stop the killing in Syria any more than in Darfur or Kosovo. As President Assad himself noted in 2009, there is no substitute for the United States. Ironically.
Yeah.
He said, so while neither intervention nor paralysis is appealing, that's pretty much the menu. That's why I favor a limited cruise missile strike against Syrian military targets, as well as arming the more moderate rebels. As I see it, it has several benefits. Such a strike may well deter Syria's army from using chemical weapons again, probably can degrade the ability of the army to use chemical munitions and bomb civilian areas, and can reinforce the global norm against chemical weapons, and a more remote prospect may slightly increase the pressure on Assad to work out a peace deal.
What, they're sending in Tom Cruise?
No.
Hit him with an e-meter?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Have we tried a Tom Cruise missile yet? Have we?
We haven't.
On a couch? Why not?
No.
To maybe annoy him to death? Something? Okay, let's...
He's going to bounce on his head.
Cody in Chicago. Hey, Cody, welcome. Hello, Cody.
Hi,
go ahead.
I just got a little bit of an observation for you, and I don't know if I'm absolutely correct in this or not, but when the presidential debates were going on, and Mitt Romney went into his whole rant about how he wanted to put boots on the ground in Syria and how they had weapons of mass destruction, so many Republicans were just drooling at the lips to try to follow him in that. And now
interesting, Cody. Yeah, you're thinking, what if Mitt Romney were president? Good point. All right, lots more to get to here. 18 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call the political party line now, 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 22 minutes after the hour. This may be the best sign that the apocalypse is near.
What?
David sends us the news. Orly Tates gives up. Steph, today, Orly Gates changed the banner on her website from world's leading Obama eligibility challenge website to review of politics, economics, constitution, law, and world affairs by attorney and Dr. Orly Tate.
Did she finish?
No, I guess she's finished.
I am finished.
Apparently, we finally let her finish. I see, and that's because of me. Stephanie Miller, help her. Because I told her, maybe birtherism, this isn't your bag.
Your bag, baby.
Maybe we need to find out another color for your parachute.
You're going to get hit with a lawsuit.
Just saying.
She's threatening.
How many, how many lawsuits? Maybe it's time to try something else. Maybe the birtherism isn't your thing.
Hasn't she threatened you with a lawsuit?
Yes.
Before?
I had to get a root canal because you. Because you said something.
What did I
say? Now I'm going to have to get a cleaning or something. Jeff in Illinois, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Stephanie. I want to say, why don't we have not exhausted every aspect. Take them to The Hague, present the evidence to the International Court, have them declared a war criminal, and then perhaps we'll get more NATO support.
We couldn't do that with George Bush.
So. Yeah, I was just going to say, with George Bush and Dick Cheney are still walking around, I'm not sure how that's going to go.
Yeah, and that's easier said than done. Yeah. I mean, that would mean boots on the ground, going in and getting the leader of a country.
Well, just give him an airline ticket to The Hague.
Oh, okay, yeah. He'll hop right on that plane.
We'll go to Schiphol first and then take a bus.
Yeah, we'll trick him.
It's interesting. And we know when you talk about, like, it depends on the source. I mean, Nicholas Kristof is a liberal. And
had a bit of a dove.
Right. I was finishing his piece. He just says intervening in Syria is the least bad option. I don't think anyone's pretending there's any good options here. But, you know, he says mine is a minority view. After the Afghanistan and Iraq wars, the West is bone weary and has little interest in atrocities unfolding in Syria or anywhere else. And then he talks about even Sarah Palin making sense, but only because she stole it from the internet.
Exactly.
So we're bombing Syria because Syria is bombing Syria. The proportion of Americans who say that the U.S. should mind its own business internationally has been a historic high in recent years. But, you know, I would posit, too, a lot of the problems we're having here are not because we might or might not do 2 days of strikes in Syria. It's because Republicans have voted against anything that might help, right? Jobs,
right.
Infrastructure, healthcare, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, when history looks back on this moment, will it view those who opposed intervening as champions of peace? Or when the textbooks count the dead children and the international norms broken with impunity, will our descendants puzzle that we took pride in retreating into passivity during this slaughter? And then, he talks about, Jim, historically, isn't this like the idealists who embraced the Kellogg-Briand Pact that banned war 85 years ago? Sure, that made people feel good, but it may also have encouraged the appeasement that ultimately cost lives in World War II. Okay, so I've just added fuel to the battle for analogies. For now, the one that has caught on is Iraq in 2003. But considering that no one is contemplating boots on the ground, a more relevant analogy in Iraq may be the 1998 Operation Desert Fox bombing of the Iraqi military sites by President Bill Clinton. It lasted a few days, and some say it was a factor in leading Iraq to give up its WMD programs. I mean, so that's the other thing. There's so many unknown. Now, Donald Rumsfeld, are unknown knowns and unknowable unknowns that we don't know.
What he knows that they may not know, and make sure he knows what they know that he may not know.
That was my point.
Sure.
He said the lessons of history in this area are complex and conflicting, offering no neat formula to reach peace and alleviate war. In most cases, diplomacy works best, but not always. When Yugoslavia was collapsing into civil war in the early 90s, early efforts at multilateral diplomacy delayed from action and led to a higher body count. Some military interventions, as in Sierra Leone, Bosnia, and Kosovo, have worked well. Others, such as Iraq, have worked badly. So having said that, analogies aren't necessarily helpful. Let me leave you with one final provocation. And he says, if we were fighting against an incomparably harsher dictator using chemical weapons on our own neighborhoods and dropping napalm-like substances on our children's schools, would we regard other countries as pro-peace if they sat on the fence as our dead piled up? And I was saying the final irony here would be is France is right this time.
Yeah.
And, you know, these may actually be weapons that are used against us at some point. I mean... Representative Loretta Sanchez, our friend from out here in California, against the strike.
Make no mistake about it. The minute that one of those cruise missiles lands in there, we are in the Syrian war.
How about this rewriting of history by the elfin Senator Jeff Sessions, who peeked his head out from his tree for a moment to say...
Who's making the pecan sandies then?
Nobody at the moment.
Oh, God.
Don't you love this? He claims Syria would have listened if Bush would have said...
Right, sure.
Yeah, right, right. He unfavorably compared Obama to Bush at a town hall when he said Syria would have very likely listened to the red line threat had it been made by George W. Bush.
Okay.
Who's infinitely more macho. Assessment says he wasn't trying to be partisan. No.
Computer says no.
Why would you think that?
Because Jeff Sessions ever...
And didn't want to, quote-unquote, weaken the president. No, of course not. He said, I do believe if President Bush had told Bashar Assad, you don't use those chemical weapons or you're going to be sorry, we're coming after you, and this will be a consequence you will not want to bear, I don't believe he would have used it. He said that Obama's inability to lead and the weakness of his red line threat has vindicated the policy of peace through strength. Oh, and who stood for that better than George Bush? Peace through strength.
Sure.
Peace is our profession. That's from Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's the one thing I do agree with the president. It's not, he didn't draw the red line. It's an international norm. It's an international law. When he's asked a question, what's he supposed to say? Oh, yeah, that'd be fine.
Whatever. Whatever you want to do. I'm good.
Right. All right, 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
They can't function without me. I'm the social glue that holds this little group together.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. Tim in Eureka sends us a,
Right-wing hypocrite.
Oh, it's not hard to find on Syria. Sean Hannity. After calling for Obama to get approval of Congress on Syria, Hannity rips Obama for getting approval of Congress on Syria.
Oh, God, really?
Tim, or joke, why did the chicken hoss cross the road to the dub side of the road? Because the black guy wants some military action. It's a little doughy, but it was a good try.
Yeah.
It really
put
was.
That back in the oven for maybe nice 10 more minutes.
Okay. All right. Representative Jim McGovern, Democrat of Massachusetts.
We're being told that there's two choices, do nothing or bomb Syria. Clearly, there have to be some other choices in between. We ought to explore them.
I'm sure the president's going to talk about that today and tomorrow night, you know, because it sounds to me like we've exhausted pretty much all of them. We've been at this for 2 years, but
And he really needs to make the case if he's going to get, you know, some of that 80% who's against action in Syria on his side.
Yep.
There's an article saying a U.S. congressman who has read the Obama administration's classified version of intelligence on the alleged Syrian poison gas attack says the report is only 12 pages. Just three times longer than the sketchy, unclassified public version and supported by no additional hard evidence. It's Alan Grayson who's been...
Let's get Congressman Grayson on. There are people I respect, all of the that are on completely opposite sides of this. John Kerry said the case has not yet been made to the American people for more than a few days, and we will continue to make the case to the American people. He said he just met with, you know, more than two dozen European foreign ministers on Saturday. He insisted that the international backing is growing, not receding. And he says, you know, as the soundbite we played, that this concerns every American's security. And that's the thing, is I think because it was such a giant load of, you know...
horse crap?
Right, about the smoking gun and the mushroom cloud in Iraq and, you know... And you can go back, and even if they didn't say it out loud, they implied with almost everything they said... that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11. Mm-hmm. That was just a lie from start to finish. And all I'm saying is these chemical weapons are clearly real.
Right.
And there clearly are al-Qaeda elements already there, which could strengthen if we do nothing. So I do get concerned that this weakens the office of the presidency. In an effort to weaken Obama, as usual, it weakens America, I think, in terms of... You know, I just think anything that might happen in the future. I mean, speaking of the right wing, Eric Bollert wrote a great piece about how Vladimir Putin is the new right wing media star. Yeah. Apparently now he's like, you know, I mean, they literally, anybody that will attack Obama is a hero to them.
Yep.
Doesn't matter if it's in America's interest or not.
Noted communist,
right.
Vladimir Putin.
Yes.
Is a right-wing hero now.
Well, he's not a communist anymore.
Well.
But.
Oh, by the way, Putin says, hey, some of our best composers are gay.
You know, Tchaikovsky.
Right, that's what he said.
Some.
He sought to ease concerns that Russia's new anti-gay laws would be used to punish athletes who display rainbow flags during the Winter Olympics, while insisting your gays are not discriminated against in his country. I love this.
Also,
he said,
it was never
I
head
assure
of KGB.
You. He said,
okay,
I
was.
Right. He said, I assure you, I work with these people.
Well, that explains the shirtless photos. There,
people that are that
that way.
I sometimes award them with state prizes or decoration for their achievements in various fields.
As long as they don't...
That sounds very inclusive, they. And these people. We have absolutely normal relations, and I don't see anything out of the ordinary here.
Yeah, as long as they don't bump uglies with other guys.
He added that Russians love Tchaikovsky.
Oh,
even
God.
Though the composer...
We love rhythmic dancing.
Even though the composer was said to have been a... homosexual. Mm-hmm. Truth be told, we don't love him because of that. Of course not. Not the icky part.
No.
The good music part, not the icky. But he was a great musician, and we all love his music. Putin said, really? Does he think this is somehow soothing? Okay.
Well, he is a gay man that wrote The Nutcracker. What?
Just saying.
Yeah.
Putin offered to meet with members of the gay and lesbian community if they asked to see him. Oh, yeah. I'm sure they're dying to get together for belly rubs. Okay.
What's Russian for? I hate you and I hate your ass face.
Bastard person.
I just hate you and I hate your ass face.
Yet. He did not know they were those kind of nuts.
No.
He wouldn't have liked it. Okay. Representative Mike McCall, Republican of Texas.
I think lobbying a few Tomahawk missiles will not restore our credibility overseas.
George Bush destroyed our credibility overseas. I love the implication, it's Obama.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I mean, okay, the French foreign minister.
Facts are facts, and that Mr. Bachel, as I said, is responsible for that. No doubt.
A lot of people have been looking at this compilation of graphic videos. How many hours did you say it was?
It's about 12 hours, and they're all available on the Senate Intelligence Committee's website if you want to see for yourself.
It's a lot of people convulsing, foaming at the mouth. Kerry said over the weekend, he said, this is our chance to join together and pursue accountability over appeasement. He warned that the international community could not be silent spectators to the slaughter and urged that now that was not the time to allow a dictator unfettered use of some of the most heinous weapons on Earth. So, again, today we will see, I'm not even sure which, presence on six networks today. And then,
they're going to be on various times.
Yeah. Tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, he will speak to the nation. So, and I'm just really anxious to hear what he has to say because I just think it's a tough one. No matter if you're a liberal, it's a tough one. Reflexively anti-war, and yet on a humanitarian level, it's awful. And in terms of what it could mean ultimately for the U.S.,
end up causing more suffering.
Yeah, I don't know that there's anything he could say that would really move the needle.
No.
Yeah.
I really don't think so.
All I know is that our reverends are better than their reverends. For instance, we had the Reverend Jim Wallace on
we
today.
Did.
Pat, did you see this? Evil Uncle Chuckles, Jim.
We're going to send over a lake of fire.
Yeah, he's probably with Putin, too.
Yeah.
The documentary Mission Congo, have you heard about this, a new film?
No.
It just debuted at Toronto Film Festival. Alleges that Pat Robertson's charity in Zaire to help refugees that fled from post-genocide Rwanda, Operation Blessing, really served as an elaborate front for his diamond mining operation.
Of course it is.
There you go.
People
that's
have
what
known
Jesus
that for years.
Would do. Yes. Huh. Oh, and by the way, here was a fact I did not know. According to the film, then-Virginia Governor James Gilmore received a personal donation of $50,000 from Robertson.
Huh.
And the newly installed Attorney General Mark Early also received a donation of $35,000 from Robertson for his election campaign. And was dependent on the influential conservative Christian support. Early decided, oddly, not to prosecute Robertson for any of that. So that's the kind of humanitarian aid that Pat Robertson.
Great.
Believes in. Isn't that nice? Okay. Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I love her.
Love her. We talked to our good friend during the. She got to hang out with Ruth Bader Ginsburg in her chambers during the arguments.
Who did?
That we had on. Brenda, our friend, who worked with her, yes. She recently officiated at a friend's same-sex wedding. She told a Philadelphia audience Friday that growing acceptance of gay marriage reflects the genius of the U.S. Constitution. She said equality has always been central to the Constitution, even if society has only applied it to minorities, be they women, black, or gays, over time. She said, so I see the genius of our Constitution and of our society is how much more embracive we have become than we were at the beginning. Her increasingly candid and forceful writing, often as the voice of dissent in the 5-4 cases, has attracted ardent fans, including one at the who was wearing a Notorious RBG T-shirt. It's a thing. Notorious.
RBG, yeah, the
right.
Notorious RBG.
Right. Awesome. She made another good point. She criticized her majority colleagues for what she called activist decisions that overturn laws better understood by Congress, such as the Voting Rights Act, which has been extended by a series of bipartisan presidents, most recently George W. Bush. Good point. Quite the judicial activists they become.
Indeed.
Oh, and she also said that when Sandy O'Connor left, she ruined everything. Okay.
Well, Sandy O'Connor ruined everything?
Well, because she would have been the vote if she had stayed on the court.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
I thought she took the W's off the keyboards or something when she left.
No,
okay.
No, there was no vandalism. She was not applying vandalism.
Not that kind of ruined
court.
Everything. Gotcha.
Okay. All right. Where am I here?
I don't know.
I don't know. Oh, here it is. It's another one of those Aren't Guns Great stories, Jim? Child shoots SWAT officer at a reading event. A SWAT officer had a Glock 35 in a thigh holster at a children's reading event when a boy managed to pull the trigger and shoot the officer. He's fine.
Great.
The officer was showing off the department's SWAT truck, vests, and other gear at a children's event. A small child, witnesses say he was 6 to 8 years old, was able to walk up to the officer and pull the trigger. So that was a lesson.
Seems like maybe the holster should prevent you from being able to...
Right. That there should
or maybe
be.
The safety would be on. Mm-hmm. Just spitballing here.
Yeah. Maybe.
Oh, here's another. This is guns and our post-racial America that we live in.
Okay.
46-year-old white Texas man shoots 8-year-old black kid in the face while he's playing. Donald Maiden Jr. just celebrated his 8th birthday. Now he's in the hospital in critical condition after a 46-year-old Dallas, Texas man shot him in the face. Witnesses say they asked him after seeing him standing around his truck as the boy was bleeding if he shot the boy. He said, yes, I shot that kid. The motive is unknown. And the mother says he was shot out of the...
I think I know what the motive is.
Well, there's a picture, and it was...
Oh, that guy? Okay.
Yeah. So I... Go ahead, speculate among yourselves as to what the motive was.
Wow.
Exactly. All right, 45 minutes after the hour, back with the remaining moments of the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's fun, it's healthy, it's good exercise. The kids just love it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 50 minutes after the hour. Thank you for all the welcome backs. We missed you, too, on our vacation.
We did.
Marion Franklin Park says, Steph, I love your show. It's like sitting with the bad kids in high school. lots of fun. Plus, you get a different kind of education. Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm.
Why, thank you, Mary. Thank you so much. Here's the thing. I think we should outlaw Nazi analogies entirely, except if you're Glenn Beck. And then he says, liberals should be hunted down like Nazis. He was doing an interview. I love this. He said, can we stop dividing ourselves? Oh, he's such a uniter. Do racists exist? Yes. Do bigots exist? Yes. But most of us are not. Is he implying that he's not? Okay. Most Americans just want to get along. Why can't we do that? What happened to us? The interviewer said, but you said you were going to hunt down progressives like an Israeli Nazi hunter. Beck, oh, I will. I think these guys are the biggest danger in the world. It's the people like Mao. People that believe big government is the answer. It always leads to millions dead.
Yeah, Mao was not a liberal. He was a despot. He was...
Okay.
Oh, moron.
Wow. Okay. Why did I somehow think the Georgia Republican Insurance Commissioner would not be supportive of Obamacare? And yet here's video of him bragging about sabotaging Obamacare.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Georgia.
Ralph Hutchins, Georgia. The latest candidate attempting to out-macho other Republicans on what he's doing to obstruct Obamacare. When one listens to the thrill in his voice on how he intends to attempt to stymie the health insurance exchanges, it's rather scary. And then I love this. What's even scarier, the response, the applause and cheers by the audience. Woo, doggy! Yep. He also stated that Georgia has passed a law that forces insurance companies to state specifically that any rate increases are not the fault of the governor, general assembly, or Department of Insurance, but because of Obamacare. In other words, irrespective of reasons, he forces insurance companies to lie. He's not helping. As Jackie would say, he's not helping.
He's not a helper.
No, he is not. All right, a little bit of celebrity. Hey, let's have a fluffy celebrity stack before we go.
All right.
Just when you thought, you know what? This could mean the end of the world. Gawker brings us Anna Wintour cancels Miley Cyrus' Vogue cover due to twerking.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Gawker writes, intimidating bob of hair, Anna Wintour. May have canceled Miley Cyrus's upcoming Vogue cover because of her performance at the Video Music Awards. Anti-twerking, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And teddy bears.
Right. Right. Have we thought of that in Syria? That and a Tom Cruise missile? Just saying.
Yes, yes, no, 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 yes, no. You're being suppressive and good.
Liberace's ex is back in jail in Nevada after failing a drug test. Oh, I don't think baby boy's going to sleep tight in prison.
No.
No.
Sleep tight, baby boy.
Oh, dear. Oh,
dear. Cats get it waterproof and moisture-proof.
A lot of people are feared with what's all that's going on in the world,
mm-hmm.
in the Middle East. Pink's biggest fear is a world without cheesecake.
Oh, that would be pretty tragic.
It is.
Especially cherry cheesecake. Oh.
She said, I'm afraid of spiders. I'm afraid of sharks. I'm afraid of the world running out of cheesecake. And see. Okay.
All right.
I don't think there's much danger of running out of cheesecake.
You should be afraid of those high heels you wore just before your hip went out. That's something to be afraid of.
Oh, Pink should?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think she actually broke her hip.
Well, she also flies along the ceiling on wires.
Oh, that.
So what? She's still a rock star.
Yes, she is.
You know what she needs? She needs a noted doctor of biology, Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil's $65,000 giant pressurized fountain of youth egg.
Uh-huh. Huh?
What?
Right.
Yep.
Sure.
TMZ has learned 63-year-old Dr. Phil has his own giant mysterious egg-shaped pod thing. It's a $65,000 piece of technology that could help reverse the aging process.
Mm-hmm.
It's a... You know what? I smell biology.
I think I do, too.
It's called a CVAC.
Okay.
CVAC.
Which stands for Cyclic Variations in Adaptive Conditioning.
Uh-huh. Or I'm going to CVAC all the money out of
right,
your pocket.
Right, out of your walk, you dope, you doctor of bullology. According to CVAC, the chamber uses a computer-controlled valve and vacuum pump to simulate...
Oh, computer-controlled.
Right, high altitude and compresses the muscles at rhythmic intervals, which reportedly improves circulation, boosts oxygen risk, blood cells, and even stimulates stem cell production?
Really?
Dr. Phil has one in his house.
That sounds just like that.
How's that working for you? Okay. It's God's way of telling you you have too much money.
Yeah, when you have a CVAC.
Do you by any chance have a $65,000 egg that you think will make you younger? Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All righty then.
And finally, Mel Gibson goes off on Malibu Cops.
Again?
Is that? Yes.
Oh.
He had an angry encounter with Malibu Cops last Saturday. Boy. The good news is he was sober and left the Jews out of it.
Wow, for once.
That's an improvement.
Law enforcement sources tell TMZ just after 1 a.m. he and a female passenger rolled up to a DUI checkpoint on Pacific Coast Highway.
Mm.
That's where at the same place he was busted for the DUI
right.
in 2001.
Where he called the cop Sugar Thief.
Oh, yes, right. That's right.
Yes.
Right.
Did he leave the officer's chest out of it
yes.
this time? Good.
No mention of Jews or... Sugar.
Good.
We're told deputies asked Mel if he'd been drinking. He said no. They asked him to produce his license, and he didn't have it on him at that point. Deputies told Mel to go to a secondary screening spot, and that's when Gibson got angry. We're told he yelled, "Why are you harassing me?"
Oh, come
deputies
on.
Asked why Mel was screaming, and he responded, "I just had problems with you deputies in the past."
Mm. You know,
meaning you deputy Jews.
They say that to everybody. If you don't have your driver's license on, you
right.
go to the... Oh.
Right. Things cooled down. Deputies let Mel off with a warning. Mel drove off, did not blame deputies or Jews for the whole Syrian
good.
Thing.
What if Mel had been black,
ending.
I wonder?
At least that's happened.
They might have responded somewhat differently.
You think? All right. Well, with the world maybe coming to an end...
Yay!
At least a giant turkey did not fly through your window like a...
But turkeys don't fly.
Well, wild turkeys
do. This one
did.
Oh, yeah, this right. one did.
Okay.
A large turkey unexpectedly arrived in a New Jersey home one morning in August. The homeowner was not getting any thanks. Huddled in her bedroom, Marie Manco, 70, instead called the police about a live intruder which had entered her home by flying through a second-story window.
That's...
A wild turkey came through my skylight. I hate when that happens.
What?
And it's flying around my house right now.
Dingo stole my baby.
Destroying everything. I'm in my bedroom. I'm afraid to come out. She's told the 911 operator. I just hear banging and destroying my entire house.
Huh.
Yeah. Officers went in with a blanket to catch the turkey. It ran off into the kitchen, smashed through a 5x5 picture window.
And jumped into the oven and became dinner.
Yes. And so that was also a happy ending.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
Well, wild turkeys can.
And we end with a WKRP
that's right.
reference and scene. Okay. That's it for us. I'd like to thank executive producer, engineer, boy, toy, crystal boy, voice, deity, Jim Warren, Travis Bone on phones and drums. Oh, and our cute new little intern.
Yeah.
Alex. Yay. Okay. We will see you tomorrow on The Stephanie Miller Show.